JazzCast Pros.
In today's episode of the Doze Podcast, I'm turning our conversation to emotional rest. We'll explore what emotional rest means, how to recognize a deficit, strategies for prevention and recovery, and common daily activities that may be depleting your emotional reserves without you even realizing it. And I'll be joined by Kelly Marie Wolford, the founder of Front Seat Life, an organization committed to improving mental health and wellness access. She will be sharing her personal journey and how she's turned her struggles into a source of strength to empower others and illuminate their path towards healing. Hello, and welcome back to the Doze Podcast. I'm Soda Kaczkowski, your trusted sleep coach and guide on a journey to transform your life through better sleep and self-care. Now, if you've been with me, you know that we're in the middle of a series on rest and the seven types of rest you need throughout the day that can better prepare your mind and body for better sleep at night. And today's conversation is centered around emotional rest. Emotional rest refers to our ability to experience and truly express our feelings fully, allowing for your emotional and psychological self to recover and rejuvenate. It involves stepping away from the emotional demands placed on you by others and yourself, and learning to create space where you can be authentic and vulnerable without judgment. Engaging in emotional rest can lead to increased self-awareness, as you have the opportunity to reflect on your emotional states and triggers in a non-judgmental setting. This insight is invaluable in the healing process, as it helps you understand your needs, your boundaries, and how to navigate your emotions in a healthier way. Understanding emotional rest can help strengthen your emotional resilience, equipping you with the ability to cope with stress and adversity more effectively. And this resilience is key to trauma recovery, as it empowers you to face your healing journey with courage and confidence. So how do you identify an emotional rest deficit? There are some questions you can ask yourself. Do you feel like you have to put on a mask or suppress your true feelings around others? Are you constantly feeling emotionally drained or numb? Do you have trouble expressing your emotions or even to yourself? Do you feel disconnected from your own feelings or the feelings of those close to you? Do you tend to focus on your flaws or your failures? And are you an excessive worrier, or do you feel constant anxiety? You know, some of the key ways to prevent an emotional rest deficit are about setting boundaries, learning to say no to emotional demands that exceed your capacity to give, learning to prioritize alone time, allocating time for self-direction and activities that allow you to be with your thoughts and your feelings, and practicing mindfulness, engaging in mindfulness activities and exercises to stay present and connected with your emotions. And to recover from an emotional rest deficit, it's about looking to seek out support and engaging in conversations with trusted friends or even a therapist who can provide a safe space for emotional expression. Creating outlets, using art, writing, or music as a way to express and process emotions. And incorporating nature therapy, spending time in nature to help reduce stress and reconnect with yourself. And there's some situations that can create these emotional rest deficits. So when we're looking to avoid things, we want to look at being constantly connected. Being always available online can lead to emotional burnout. So consider, you know, a digital detox. Workplace stress. You know, high-pressure environments without support from emotional health can deplete your emotional reserves. And social expectations. Trying to meet societal or personal expectations can lead to suppressing your true feelings and contributing to emotional fatigue. Emotional rest involves finding ways to make a deposit and to seek out what you need and to be honest and open with yourself. On that note, today I'm joined by Kelly Marie Wolford. She's a passionate advocate, educator, and founder of Front Seat Life, LLC, an organization committed to improving mental health and wellness access. With personal experiences of living with borderline personality disorder, chronic depression, generalized anxiety, and surviving childhood sexual abuse and suicidal attempts, she's leveraged her story to empower others and advocate for mental health care, particularly within BIPOC communities. As the inaugural director of the Erie County Department of Health's Office of Health Equity, she works to ensure health and wellness for marginalized populations in Erie County, New York. Her extensive background includes roles in community relations, mental health advocacy, and contributions to the creation of the University at Buffalo's Community Health Equity Research Institute. A dedicated volunteer and leader, Kelly Marie has been recognized for her efforts in mental health and racial equity, notably as a 2021 LISC Rubinger Fellow. Through her leadership and advocacy, she is making a significant impact on health equity and mental health care access. Kelly, thank you so much for being here. I am so grateful to have you here today and to share your journey with my listeners and to help us understand how intricately mental health is tied to emotional rest. Now, emotional rest, of course, refers to our ability to create space where we can be authentic and vulnerable without judgment or expectation. And I know that you have an incredibly powerful journey that you've been through, and it was a driving force in creating your business, Front Seat Life. You spend your days creating space for people to share their own stories and strategies for overcoming mental health challenges. So could you tell us a little bit about your mission and your work, including hosting your own podcast and how it plays a crucial role in spreading that message?
Sure. So thank you so much for having me on the Doze. I have lived with mental health conditions for, at this point, most of my life. The older I get, the longer I've lived with mental health conditions. And in 2013, it culminated in a suicide attempt. From that space, I was not able to find the type of resources I needed to connect with the type of folks that I needed to help me in my healing journey. Everything was about how to not end up in the place that I was already in. And so I needed something different, and I had difficulty in finding that. And that's where Front Seat Life came from, because I created the space that I needed because I wasn't able to find it. And so my goal is to help women and communities of color kind of address mental health barriers in a way that is comfortable for them, in spaces that are comfortable for them, in, again, in the ways in which, the many, many ways that we can address mental health, depending upon the person, the journey, the place, the space, and to just give voice and to hold space for people to be able to have those conversations. And so that's what Front Seat Life is. The podcast, Healthy Illness Podcast, really takes it from a similar thought, but really the goal with Healthy Illness is to help people living with mental health conditions develop and sustain healthier relationships, not just with people, relationships with self, relationships with food, relationships with money, relationships with sleep, relationships across the gambit of all things that we can have and be in relationships with. Because again, that space isn't readily available for folks, at least not the people that I have interacted with and the folks that tune into the podcast. So the podcast, we're in year 3 or 4. It's been a while. We recorded our 100th episode a few weeks ago. And so even with that, having a podcast that allows me to step away when I need to step away, like I don't show up every week and I'm exhausted and tired and can't function. Like the podcast is set up in a way that allows me to show up when I can. When am I able to give? When can I pour out? I'm still on a schedule, but it's built to be a healthy engagement for me. So even though I'm helping other people build healthy relationships, I'm ensuring that I'm living up to the same tools and using the same tools in my day-to-day life, which is inclusive of the podcast and Front Seat Life and my 9-to-5 job and being all the other things, you know, that I am out here in the world.
That's wonderful. The tools and strategies that you incorporate or that you help people in the work that you do, what does that look like? Because I think I'd mentioned to you, I'm not one for a place of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting used to, when we talk about emotional rest, it's about recognizing the things around you that can either fill your cup or that can drain you. But it also goes into, how do we speak to ourselves? How do we treat ourselves? How do we allow others to treat us? What are some of the tools and strategies that you help people with? And what does that process look like?
So it's different for every person, because everyone has a different set of experiences, especially when it comes to coaching. Most people have difficulty with setting boundaries, with understanding what their personal yeses and nos are. And so it's difficult if you don't know what your personal yeses and nos are. How is someone else going to know? If you don't know what your boundaries are, how can you enforce that boundary if you don't even know what it is? We're not really taught how to do that. Just like we're not taught how to sleep, right? You just get into bed and wake up in the morning, right? But there is a science to it. There is work that occurs. We aren't taught emotional regulation. Folks that are good at it pick it up. others go through therapy, others, you know, go on a healing journey in order to find it. And so that journey is going to be different depending upon the person. That really is where Front Seat Life came from. We're all in this journey together. We're all on the road, traveling together in our own vehicles, but each vehicle is built differently. And if you're the driver of your car, right, you may decide to take a pit stop and take the scenic route. I might drive straight through on the highway because I'm trying to get to my destination as fast as I can. Someone else may want to take the country road, but we're all on the journey together. And so similarly, depending upon where people are in their journey, some people never want to see a therapist. They will not go, absolutely refuse, but they understand that they need some help in negotiating mental health for themselves. And so for that person, our goal is not, let's get you into therapy. The goal is, where are the places in which you want to be stronger when it comes to your mental health? And so for me, living with mental health conditions, I strive to live a healthy life regardless of my mental health conditions. It's just wanting to be in a healthier space mentally. So where are you and where would you like to be?
Being that you're working in communities of color, how would you say helping an individual kind of self-identify? Because I mean, I feel even as a grown adult, every day I'm still learning what I have to unlearn, right? We grew up in a very different time. Our childhood was very different. We kind of pushed through a lot of what we know is trauma. I'll frequently reference that it was in the fourth grade when the Challenger happened. It was like, they turned off the TV, you put down your head for 5 minutes and they carried on. And now in this day and age, that would never happen. And there were so many things that I was exposed to as a child that I know I haven't processed, where it's like, you can get triggered so easily by something. And sometimes it's like too late in the moment. How do you get people to kind of self-identify and recognize that maybe they need help in certain areas when it comes to their mental health? Because I know, especially in the Latino community, we're kind of like, you know, it's for the strong, and you don't talk about your problems. You don't talk about your family. You kind of keep things in. And it's like, a lot of that stuff is very toxic. We need to learn how to kind of release those floodgates. And I'm still learning how to do that.
And it's tough when there aren't words to describe the thing that you're going through, or we've never learned the words. So that's a part of it, is being able to find the words to talk about whatever the things are, in addition to realizing that there are things that we need to talk about. So you can realize that there's stuff that we need to address, because again, we don't talk about that here. Family business days in the house, you need to be stronger, pray your way through, only the toughest survive, where there's a will, there's a way, will yourself to be happy, you want to be sad. We don't do that. That's what they do, you know, these mystery other people. And that is detrimental to our health. And so being able to take a step back and say, okay, here I am in this human experience, and I have all of the things that make me, including my culture, my family, my community. At the same time, my brain, my body needs to heal from things, like you said, I don't even know exist. A part of it is becoming aware of our actions and aware of how we respond to life. One of the things I had to learn was listening to people when I hear the same thing over and over again. So for me, a key warning sign that I identified by paying attention to other people was when people would ask me, are you okay? With that questioning tone, because I'm a happy-go-lucky kind of person. So if I'm not in that, you know, jovial space, then something must be wrong, quote unquote. Or the other one is, oh, you're very short today. Like, you know, people are almost like taken aback by the brevity of a comment with a yes or no. And it didn't mean that there was something wrong, but it did mean that I was processing something. Maybe something was wrong, but I was in my head trying to figure out all of these things that were going on and didn't have a way to articulate what was happening. And it wasn't until I went through my recovery process in 2013 that I was able to begin to find the words to be able to say, this means this. Or when I'm short, when someone says, oh, are you okay? I need to start paying attention to my words. If someone is short with me, who usually is not, did I say something, do something, project something that I'm unaware of? And so a part of it is communication and saying, hey, did I say something or do something? Are we good? Like, how did that come off, you know, when we were in conversation? And it is opening yourself up to be vulnerable and saying, perhaps I showed up in a way that is outside of who I believe I am, right? And also extending myself grace to know that these things will bubble up and I won't know that they're bubbling up until I either feel a way or see someone respond to me in a way. So a lot of it is knowing yourself, and that in and of itself is a journey. Like getting to the place where you're able to read someone else's reactions to see how you said a thing or how you responded to a thing. It is not an overnight type of situation. And I'd also say that as we learn and grow and we find the words and we have these conversations and we begin to heal from things, we also begin to unearth other things that we need to heal from. So what would be triggering to me 20 years ago is no longer triggering. However, if I unearth something or am placed in a situation I didn't know that that was going to be triggering, I may respond in the same way. It's not the old thing. It's very much a new thing. I've healed from the old thing, but here I am with this new thing. And, you know, I'm short of breath. I can feel, you know, my emotions running high. I'm starting to get a little sweaty and clammy. So a new thing will create a physical response that an old thing no longer will, because I've handled that old thing. And so often I think we think healing is about being one and done, right? Like, oh, I'm healed. I'm good. I've dealt with all of the things in my life. It's impossible. You don't even know all of the things that you've been through to know all of the things that you can heal from. So it's extending yourself again, that grace in that process of learning who you are and that process of learning how people receive you. And that helps with the journey of understanding triggers, understanding responses, being able to tie a reaction to a feeling so that you can name the thing that you feel and then you can deal with it. So like until you can name it, it's difficult to deal with it because
that's
what are you dealing
so
with?
True. It's like learning a new language, because I know, I mean, as a woman at one point not too long ago where it was like you kind of had to decide, am I going to be career minded or can I be, you know, a committed mother? And it's like, I choose to be both. And when I'm in whatever respective space, I give 100%. But becoming a mom completely changed my whole mindset. And I thought about, what do I want to pass on to her? What do I want to show her? I want her to have self-love, and I want her to give herself grace, and I want her to be forgiving of herself. And if she makes a mistake, to learn from it. Where growing up, it was always, well, you don't make mistakes, and you know, you've got to be strong. And if you can't do this, you just figure it out. And it's like, you don't complain. And, and now it's like, I'm trying to learn, unlearn a lot of the things. You know, growing up, asking for help is a big one. I mean, when you have, Breen was talking about vulnerability, that's been a big thing, right? I was never one for vulnerability at all. I'm still not. I mean, I'm still learning my way through that. You spend your whole life learning about yourself, right? You don't even start to begin until half your life's over, right? And you start to give yourself the space to work on it.
Yeah. And you know, being able to identify that that is a need that you may have. Right. So many people, no one leaves here alive, right? So many people leave this earth and have never had the type of conversation that you're having with yourself, because they didn't know that they could take space to focus on themselves, to take space to say, how can I be a different parent? To take space and say, what do I need to heal from? Or vulnerability is something that I struggle with. And that's okay, right? Because we're learning and growing. And as we learn and grow and share and teach our children and those that watch and pay attention, because so many people are watching and paying attention that we never know are watching and paying attention.
Well, our children, right? They don't do what we say. They do what we do.
Yes.
So you have to be that living, walking, breathing example of it. Because if I say, do this or take care of yourself in this way, she'll say, well, mommy, you haven't slowed down. Did you eat today? Did you? She always brings it back on me.
Yes.
Like, little girl, I taught you that. She's like, but you're not doing it. She's like, I always say she's my best little coach. Mm-hmm. She takes good care of me. She reminds me of all the lessons that I try to instill in her.
Which is incredible, because so many people don't have that, right? They don't even know that is a way a parental relationship can work, right?
Oh, because I feel like I learn so much from her every single day. She makes me a better person because she teaches me every day. Like when I talk about the things like unlearning, you know, with children, it's like unconditional love. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's like you make a mistake. As long as you say sorry, you're still their favorite person in the whole world. They're just so open. It's only as they start to get older that they start to self-critique. And, you know, the mm-hmm. way we speak to ourselves, it all transpires getting into being a teen and growing into an adult, you know, starting to compare yourself to others when really we need to just worry about our own narrative. What do I need to feel fulfilled? You know mm-hmm. what I mean? What brings me happiness? What space do I need? And taking the time to address that and know that that's okay. That's not selfish to take care of yourself. It's not selfish to say no to other people. You have to put yourself first because you can't pour from an empty cup.
Right. Absolutely. And what that process looks like. You and I can be agreeing on every point, but how that rolls out in my life is going to be different than how that rolls out in your life because we have different experiences, different people. We have different life experiences that we're bringing to the table. The people around us are different. Our children are different. Right. And so it's okay that we both agree. And then when it comes to implementation, that implementation is going to look a little different. The traumas are different. The support systems may be different. What we then need to build up in ourselves may be different because of all of those bits and pieces of our lives that come together to make us and those that we love who we are.
I think that's where the stories are very powerful because that's what connects mm-hmm. us, right? That's what yes. creates that vulnerability where you might not have had the same history or the same life, but if you connect on something, people know that they're not alone and we need mm-hmm. to know that we're a part of something. And I think that's an important message, right? That you're not alone. There's always someone there. You just have to be willing to reach out and ask for that help.
Yeah, which is a lesson in and of itself, right?
How do people contact you for Front Seat Life? What type of services are you currently offering? How can they reach you?
Through Gmail, so frontseatlife@gmail.com. Or right on the website, you could fill out interest form, which is frontseatlife.com. And on Instagram and Facebook, it's at the Front Seat Life. There are a couple of services. One, the podcast. Two, workshops. And those workshops can be modified.
We need to do something, Kelly. I think we need to create something. Have you come into the space here and put together some sort of program or seminar or community workshop where we kind of share what you do? Because I think what we do together in tandem is a really strong message. Because I mean, sleep, there is a vicious cycle that can exist between our stress and our anxiety and then not sleeping well. And a lot of times it's we're so busy during the day, but when we're alone with our thoughts at night, that's where you get those ruminating thoughts. If you're not working through the self-care or you're not working through your communication or learning about what is it that you need and asking for what you need, that can also feed into that mental health issue that can lead to those sleep troubles. So I think that that's kind of an important message to get out there to help people learn how to manage that.
I'm here for it. You let me know. I'm ready.
So I just have a last question for you. Mm-hmm. So looking towards the future, what are your hopes for the evolution of mental health care and the broader understanding of emotional rest within our society? How can we move people to really focus on emotional rest and working towards really that self-identifying that we talked about? What do you think has to happen?
I think we have to be in a space where people feel comfortable focusing on their feelings, on their emotions, on the recovery process, on health, on rejuvenation, changing society's view on what that means is a big step, but is, I think, the step that will help people begin to focus on self and not in a selfish way, but realizing that we do have to take time to rest. We do have to take time and process our emotions. We do have to take time and either step away or step into healing in order to be able to be better human beings to each other. And the more we change society's kind of view around emotional rest, the easier it will be for someone to say, I need help, or I need to take some time to focus on this piece of me that's healing. We still very much, I mean, in the workplace and families are told to just like suck it up, buttercup, get over it. Everybody's hurting. Everybody's traumatized. That may be the case, but we all don't have to live in a place of brokenness. we can heal from that. Yes, we may all have a traumatic experience or may all be able to point to something in our lives that's difficult. But if we as a society can say, yes, let's support each other, let's change the conversation so that you can say, I need help and not be ridiculed. Or children can say that they have a concern and not be told, oh, you're a kid, you don't have anything to worry about. Like, why are you stressed out? Oh, when I was your age, right? Those are people with feelings and emotions and experiences. We need to pour into them so that they can grow to be healthier, happier people that then go on to create healthier, happier people. Like, it's a really easy equation in my mind, but how that equation works is not so easy, but it's basic and complex at the same time. So more supportive society.
Something I always think of, again, going back to my daughter, who is it that I needed, right? To be there in that space, not just for her, but when you're setting an example for others, you know, whether it's, you know, mentoring someone who is older or younger or what have you, how can you show up and be the person that wasn't there for you, right? Mm-hmm. I think is an important part of that. Well, Kelly, thank you so much for joining me today to have this talk on emotional rest. And I know you're going to be joining me next week. I have some questions for you in regards to spiritual rest, because I think it's really important to reconnect in that way.
Yes.
Emotional rest is as essential as physical rest for our well-being. Yet it's often neglected in discussions around health. By identifying signs of emotional fatigue, implementing strategies to prevent and recover from emotional rest deficits, and understanding the daily activities that may deplete your emotional energy, you can start to prioritize your emotional health with the same urgency you give to your physical health. Remember, the most effective rest occurs when you purposefully revive the parts of your life that you regularly deplete. Until next time, thank you for listening. Remember to join us next week as we continue to explore innovative ways to improve your sleep and revolutionize your rest. If you've enjoyed what you heard, please subscribe to the Doze podcast. I still have lots to share with you as we work together towards creating solutions around your unique sleep challenges and needs. Until then, remember, you're pure potential if you change how well you sleep.
Hi, I'm Kelly.
And I'm Kelly,
the host of Getting Real with Bossy, the real, raw, and honest podcast about small business ownership.
We created Bossy to be a safe place to ask the hard questions and to get support that's necessary.
With our experience, 9 businesses and over 25 years, we continue to bear it all and share what we wish we had known.
We move past the must-be-nices and start getting real. Come along as we interview small business owners and get the true story.
Leave with another tool for the next time you feel alone on this journey.
Business ownership leads to unexpected knowledge. What are you an expert at?
Tell us at Getting Real with Bossy and subscribe today.